Hi, everyone. This is JP, and you are listening to the Exploring EOS podcast. You can find all of our episodes over at exploringeos.com. And today we are diving into a new application of EOS to help manage supply chain issues. We're talking with Isaac Balbin from Parcel.io, and I'm really excited to talk to him. So, Isaac, welcome to the Exploring EOS podcast.
Thanks, JP. Lovely to be here. Might just throw in quickly that it's parcel.co.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's all right. Just don't want any confused people going to the wrong website. I think we're all familiar with all the phishing that goes on in this industry. So,
Absolutely. Well, I do apologize about that, but I feel like just about everything in EOS is .io. So I will be absolutely sure that is correct on the show notes page so nobody is led astray. Parcel, parcel.co. There we go. Okay. So Isaac, thank you for correcting that right away. And could you please just introduce yourself and give us a little bit of your background?
Yeah, sure. So I guess my background is I'm an RF and microwave electrical engineer, and ended up going all the way through to doing a PhD at university because I like the big, long, difficult projects that you can really throw yourself into. And out of that, did quite well, got pretty lucky and was able to have two different patented technologies that came out of it. In case you're wondering, the thesis was about chipless RFID. So if you're familiar with RFID technology, one of the biggest problems in that is that the most expensive component is the chip. So if you're able to replicate some of the base functionality of that system without the requirement for a chip, well, you can actually deploy it at a much larger scale than it is otherwise possible. So,
okay, very cool. Yeah, that's some high level stuff. So that's great to hear.
Yeah, no, cool. And then I guess after that, after university, went down an entrepreneurial path because I really, the passion that I had was to create things that people would actually use. You know, it's discoveries that just stay up in the ether and only other academics see. I mean, that doesn't give the passion and the drive to stay up all night, 6-7 nights a week and do what we've got to do to get these things done. You know, some of my colleagues during the PhD did say that the letters actually stand for permanent head damage. So, but that's all right. So ended up, going down an entrepreneurial path. And then around a year ago, I had a few things happen. I had a friend that was making a lot of money on Bitcoin. It was the great days of Bitcoin. And he kept telling me, you've got to invest, you've got to invest, you've got to invest. And I turned around and said to him, look, it feels like a scam. It sounds a bit like a scam. And I'm not 100% sure about it. So let me take a bit of a look at it. So from there, I kind of took a deep dive to the real base level with the cryptography and how they add blocks to the chain and had the hashing algorithms and some of the other problems in and around it. And through that, I fell in love with blockchain. And I really genuinely believe that blockchain is going to change the world because it's a technology tool that's enabling changes in our behavior that simply weren't possible before. So I think it's just a really exciting thing to be a part of. Around the same time, I actually went to a meetup. I had a friend who was a biochemist. She was helping run a part of a series of meetups, just, interesting things. And that one happened to be about medicinal cannabis. Now, I mean, heard about and knew about cannabis, obviously, for a long time. But this was the first time in my life that I saw real facts, figures, and science to justify why and how medicinal cannabis is effective. And I mean, it was at that time that I learned about the endocannabinoid system, which is a whole regulatory system in the body that predominantly interacts using cannabinoid receptors. And those cannabinoids are generally only found in cannabis. This is why cannabis is so important to have available as a medicine for patients potentially in need, because it can do things that other things can't. It also, I guess, suffers from a lot of stigma, which you know, is probably undeserved. And I think, you know, we'd need more time than we've got for this podcast to go through all the ins and the outs of that. But I think what started to happen in the last 10 or 15 years, and this happened to me personally, is when you see a patient whose life was effectively saved because of medicinal cannabis. I mean, for me, it was a kid here in Australia that I saw at the meetup. It was wheelchair bound. He had a rare condition. And according to the way that our government in Australia was regulating the medicinal cannabis program at that time, this kid was never going to be able to qualify because he had a rare condition, so it didn't fall under one of the ones that they were opening up access for. But I mean, you know, he was going to be a triathlete, but then all of a sudden he started to get extremely high levels of pain and many, many seizures, up to 200 a day. And none of the medicine that he's been given is helping, you know, and it's predominantly opioid based, and those medicines have their place, you know, they're not bad things that are, but none of that was helping. Luckily, his parents are both nurses, and they managed to know someone who knew someone who could source for them black market medicinal cannabis, which they, in desperation, sourced for their son. And lo and behold, since that time, didn't have a seizure. Pain levels, rather than getting up to a 14 out of 10, only came up to a 7. And effectively, the cannabis saved this kid's life. And then I saw him bravely and with great difficulty stand up from his wheelchair when, you know, not too many months before that, he couldn't get up out of his bed. And when you see something like that, you just have to be some sort of a monster to want to continue to deny access to patients that need that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you know, I think both cannabis and blockchain/cryptocurrency, that they have a negative stigma associated with them. And, you know, one of the lines that I like to use is, it's only when we convince the grandmothers that we'll have made it. So when we're deploying our technology, we're always thinking, you know, if you're an elderly person who hated technology and wants nothing to do with it, how are you still going to be able to benefit from all of this? And I think we've managed to put something together in Parcel that can go some way towards achieving that.
Sure. Well, you must not be somebody who is shying away from controversy, because you're jumping into two, you know, controversial things, blockchain and cannabis, which definitely, I mean, I'd say cannabis is more controversial, but you must have a strong will to be able to handle this.
Well, nothing worth doing is easy, right? So, you know, I think it's more just that, you know, I happen to fall into a place where I've got, with my own background and with the technology background and other backgrounds of the people on my team, that we've got the ability to put something forward that can potentially make a difference. So I think it would almost be criminal not to pursue it. And I mean, you know, as I stated right in the beginning of the podcast, really believe blockchain is going to change the world. But, you know, it's another one of those things where it's been hijacked by people looking for short-term gain rather than the long-term good of all. Mm-hmm. However, I think that you do see an undercurrent of people with legitimately good intentions. And to be fair, I mean, that's one of the things that I really love about the EOS community, that it's, you know, it's not a pack of vultures out there trying to rip, you know, an unfortunate body to pieces. It's people that are genuinely collaboratively trying to solve problems.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, that's one thing I like about EOS as well. And with cannabis, I think it's interesting because there are a lot of parallels with blockchain, and there are, you know, people who just want to use it for fun and whatever. And then there's kind of a parallel to what you were just saying, but I'm just personally kind of interested in health generally and research that from time to time. And I've definitely seen more and more research coming out about, for example, CBD oil, which comes from the cannabis plant, and it is helpful in lowering inflammation and things like that. And then THC, which is what causes the psychoactive effects also potentially has some benefits that they're studying as well. So I think this is it's just an interesting confluence of two factors that are kind of have similar, backgrounds or features or something that are coming together. I've never used cannabis and I'm not really planning to, but if it can help people with these rare diseases and inflammation things, then I'm open to seeing what can be done there. So what does Parcel actually do to help in this industry?
Yep. So we've identified a number of problems. And sorry, before maybe I jump into this, I would like to just restate that Parcel is a supply chain technology platform. So the Parcel concept could have been deployed in multiple different industries. We could have tried to attack pharmaceuticals or organic food or wine, or there's a number of things that where this would make the most sense, but we chose cannabis for two reasons. First of all, for ethical reasons, where we're able to open up and enable access for patients in need, and also to optimize the medicine that those patients are receiving. But at the same time, cannabis has a lot of challenges where the technology that we're putting in place can help deal with them. So one of those challenges are banking challenges. So as I'm sure you're familiar, particularly in the United States, where cannabis is generally legalized at a state level rather than at a federal level. And this creates all sorts of problems for financial institutions that want to serve cannabis businesses. There was a memo that was put out by a judge named Cole, but then that was rescinded. And to be frank, there's a lot of confusion around the exact state of regulations, where it fundamentally a lot of the time boils down to the opinions of the local law enforcement and how they feel about it. And to me, law should be objective rather than being so highly objective and inconsistent.
I've seen cases in the U.S. in states where marijuana has been legalized, where the store that's selling it is basically unable to get a bank account, right? Because at the federal level, it's illegal. At the state level, it's legal, but banks are regulated at both the state and the federal level, and so the banks don't want to touch it.
Well, because what they're going to do is they're risking their insurance and the rest of their business, which for most major banks, as big as business cannabis is, they deal with much larger sums of money. So there are some financial institutions. And the other thing that I'd say is the compliance reporting that becomes incumbent on financial institutions to comply with is not something that they're usually set up to deal with. So, for example, it's very difficult for the Bank of America to definitively prove that every gram of cannabis that went through a dispensary or the transactions of which flowed through their bank was properly compliant end to end. So it's very difficult for them to be able to do it. That's set up obviously opportunity for some software providers to be able to help and assist dealing with this. And there's a number of companies that have come up to make it a little bit easier, but I guess what we've tried to do at Parcel is take more of a global view, because our ultimate vision is that we want to enable the global cannabis industry. And we're going to the reasons why that's so important a little bit later. So another one of the big challenges that exist in cannabis are the product tracking requirements. So I think it goes without saying why in cannabis it's important to track the product to make sure that we know where each and every gram, let's say, ended up, to make sure that there's been no diversion into the black market. Similarly, it's very important to make sure that no black market product managed to work its way into the legal supply chain. So using generally IoT technology, but mostly NFC. So for those that are unaware, NFC is the tap and go technology. So Apple Pay is based on, it's that short range wireless technology. It's actually a subset of RFID, which is why I'm very, very familiar with it. But it's the brilliant thing about it, that a lot of people haven't appreciated the big change that's coming, is that now most phones have that technology in it. And that's going to start to enable as well a whole range of consumer functions, because that tapping action doesn't just have to be a payment function. That can be you opening a door to your hotel room. That could be you purchasing a product at a store, or you know, getting pre-purchase information or whatever it is, or directions. And that NFC technology actually was held back for a long time because Apple preferred to use Bluetooth low energy, particularly iBeacon protocol, which they patented, to be able to do things like Apple Pay. However, ultimately, the open source technology won the day, which was NFC, and I think that story really speaks to the EOS community well. So what we do is we turn packaging into smart packaging. By doing that, we're now able to uniquely and securely identify each and every bit of packaging that our system interacts with that's out in the market. Then using a combination of cloud technology, mobile technology, computer vision, chip technology, and just all of the tricks that we have at our disposal, because the handover of the product is where a lot of the security mechanisms kick in, with a very granular level of data, track that product as it moves through the supply chain end to end, all the way until it's destroyed. Now, I'll probably also jump on and say that the good thing about when we make that packaging smart packaging is that smart packaging is actually context aware. So as it's moving through the supply chain, it's got a track and trace function. But, you know, things actually do sometimes fall off of the back of trucks legitimately. So what would happen if a package fell off the back of a truck and someone came upon it? Well, using the smart packaging, someone would have a clear, visible way to be able to interact with and find out what that product is and what they should do with it. Obviously, if they want to do the right thing. If they don't want to do the right thing, we also have a series of alerts and triggers to be able to give local law enforcement the tools that they need and want to be able to fairly police this whole industry. Another okay. place that's had a lot of challenges.
Interesting. It sounds like, you know, I think if most people heard of blockchain and cannabis, they'd be kind of thinking that you're trying to get around all of the regulatory, you know, the laws and the regulations and everything. But it sounds like really what you're trying to do is use blockchain to make it so you can comply with all of that, like really, really well.
That's right. And okay. the other thing is we've tried to introduce a paradigm shift in thinking. So I was talking about product tracking, right? Mm-hmm. And when I talked about it, it was all very clear, but there's a new thing that the blockchain allows us to do, which is financial tracking. So we've got a little analogy that we tell. So that our good friend Einstein told us that matter and energy are just two different aspects of the same thing, right? And what we're saying is that product movement and the associated financial activity are also just two different aspects of the same thing. So when I was talking about a product, you can imagine in your head, this product exists and I track it until it's consumed or destroyed, and that's its life cycle. Well, what we do is we introduce a dedicated fixed value cryptocurrency. So it's one-to-one against the US dollar and that we're fully liquid on. So we create this token, it comes to life, when people put real funds through our treasury. And then when real funds are withdrawn from our treasury, those tokens are destroyed. So if you can imagine a consumer that came and bought $10 of this cryptocurrency, then those, let's say, 10 tokens came to life, and then they went up to the dispensary, to the transporter, to the distributor, to the grower. And then the grower, after some time, he has a profit and he wants to pull it out. Well, I've now been able to clearly map the life cycle of the financial activity. And it's because we do that, that we're able to do all sorts of high level compliance reporting. And even companies that are already doing compliance reporting, we want to work very strongly with them, because again, our expertise is not dealing with the government. Our expertise is to build the technology. There are already people out there that have mapped out, you know, laws and regulations through 70 and more jurisdictions. And, you know, we kind of try to take the engineer's approach of, you know, not reinventing the wheel, you know, and if it's not broken, don't fix it. So the other thing that we try to do for the industry as well is help the cannabis industry legitimize itself. So we partly want to do that through features that we have, like a public transparency dashboard, where the most base level information regarding product movement and financial movement, and this is obviously anonymized and aggregated so that it's depersonalized and delinked to individual businesses or people. But effectively, we'll have dashboards that the general public can log on to see how the cannabis industry is performing in their area. And that should allow them to be able to make much more informed choices when they're speaking to their political representatives about how they would like to regulate cannabis, you know, in their state, in their city, in their, on their street. And then above and beyond that, we're planning to take advantage of a number of tools and features that exist within EOS. And, you know, it's one of the reasons that I love EOS to give the community of people that are participating in the cannabis ecosystem a real voice that can't be yelled over, so that, you know, we'll be able to say legitimately, you know, 500,000 cannabis users in California, 75% of them think that, you know, home delivery should be legal on a state level and local regulation shouldn't overturn that. You know, simple things like that where, look, it's a difficult issue and both sides of the argument have a legitimate point. So, you know, we need to ask the people, but we can't just ask them once. It's one of the things that I love with EOS, that we just keep asking, because that way, as soon as minds change, that's then reflected in the reality that we're living in.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so it sounds like you're solving a lot of problems on a lot of different levels. You know, when I came into this interview, I was thinking, okay, it's a supply chain thing. So you're going to track cannabis and this is a sensitive, I don't want to say substance, but plant, I guess. And so maybe it's like allowing people involved in this industry to bypass the banks, or maybe it's allowing people to kind of get around some regulations, but it's really solving a lot of the problems in a way that's like compliant with regulation, compliant with laws, and then even like going further into providing real business value to the people using Parcel.
Absolutely. And I mean, we've been very cognizant when we're putting this together that each and every participant in our ecosystem should get a real and direct benefit from doing so. You know, so for example, lab testing companies, well, they should get something if they jump on the system and they do the right thing. And then we've designed it so they do that. We've even built in incentives in our system to try and encourage the industry to advance even faster than what it's doing at the moment. You know, so for example, if we talk about if we stay on the lab testing, you know, earlier you mentioned THC and CBD. So, you know, I'm sure, most people have heard those two terms, well, not most, many people, but I mean, how many people know about how many variants of THC there actually are in cannabis, whether we're talking about Delta 9 or Delta 8 or, you know, some of the other variants. And, you know, when we're talking about CBD, again, there are, I haven't got an exact number over my head, but it's at least 20 to 30 different variants of cannabinoids. And the thing is that the science already has shown us that it's each and every one of these chemical constituents in the cannabis plant that'll determine its effectiveness as a medicine for patients. You know, there's the art of strain matching and it's known, and everyone knows pretty well that you need to match a cannabis strain to a particular medical condition, to a particular patient, to be able to get the optimal outcome. Now, that's fine, but there's a number of problems challenges that exist that are preventing doctors, researchers, bud tenders from giving the best advice to patients. So, you know, that goes all the way back to strain definitions. How do you define a strain? You know, that the OG Kush that I bought and was very effective for me as a patient in San Jose should be the same OG Kush that I purchased when I had to go visit my family in New York City or something like that. So what we tried it, so we put lab test results on chain, you know, for reasons that are fairly obvious, immutability and being able to verify product downstream in the supply chain. But the way that, so the science of cannabis tells us that there's over 400 chemicals that we need to be listing. However, regulations require 2, 6, sometimes 20 different substances. So what we've done is we've reserved room on chain for all 400 and then at least another 120 or so, because I expect the science to develop. Hopefully things don't stop as they are right now. And then by so doing it, we hope to be able to build the base level data set that researchers and doctors and prescribers need to be able to make much more informed and accurate choices about strain matching. But we try to also take it a level above and beyond that, because, all right, let's say I'm a person, I have a particular medical condition, and you were able to tell me exactly which strain you want to all that detail that I just described. Where am I going to get it? The simple fact of the matter is you can't grow every strain in every place in every way. And I think if we have a look at the wine industry, I think we see a great example of that. I mean, you know, if you told people in the wine industry that, you know, going forward, Australian wine just won't be part of the equation anymore, well, there'll be something missing. It's not that the rest of the world will be able to fill that gap. So similarly in cannabis, where there's much higher levels of complexity that we need to deal with, we actually must have an international supply chain so that patients will always be able to source the best medicine.
Interesting. And I get so one thought I just had about that is, Would this blockchain then also kind of serve almost as marketing? Because I assume some people have their own sort of proprietary plant that they've hybridized or selectively bred or whatever, so that it meets certain criteria in terms of which chemicals are in it. So then you can look at the blockchain and say, well, where do I get that? Oh, it's only sold by this company or whatever.
Exactly. But I'm really glad that you mentioned that, because marketing is something that is a really important part of this industry and not very well focused on. And in fact, the industry is not well prepared for what will happen when things like regulations for plain packaging, as they exist in Canada for cannabis products under the new laws, that's going to make brand differentiation very difficult. So, you know, but for, you know, at a, even if the product was almost the same and it's just a branding difference, that's going to be very difficult to reflect to consumers. But then above and beyond that, as we just said, cannabis consumers are smart and they want a lot of data about the products that they're purchasing. They want to be able to see a video from the grower. They want to be able to see a full product history from the time that it was a seed and what happened to it and what the weather conditions were like the whole time that it was growing until it arrived in that store. And they want to be able to then, you know, add that to a subscription order and so that they can regularly source some of that product. They want to be able to leave detailed levels of feedback so that the rest of the industry can benefit from the experience that they're sharing. It's one of those things where, again, the similarities between the blockchain space and the cannabis space are very stark. You know, you've got, let's just call them criminal elements for lack of a better term right now, that are making it really tough for those that are there, that are in there for all of the right reasons. So part of what we're trying to do is take the best of both worlds and bring them together so that the overlapping levels of good people in both industries can actually work together to get a better overall outcome. And just quickly, I'll go on about marketing. Mm-hmm. I spoke about the smart packaging and I said a context aware. So it's got that track and trace function through the supply chain. But when that product has been scanned in by a dispensary, the functionality will change so that you get pre-purchase information. So you might get lab test results of the batch of the product. You might get a video from the grower. You might get, you know, other bits of information that you're looking for to help inform your choice. The very same bit of smart packaging then is used during the purchasing process to facilitate the handover of product and financial funds. And then post-purchase, the same smart packaging is what allows the user to, for example, add that specific product to a regular order or leave feedback about how they're feeling from a medicinal or just general user perspective against that very specific product over there. And then even if they've mixed products or other things. And the whole idea of it is that we're giving people information that they're very likely to want at the time that they want to get it. And the last piece that I'll just add is obviously within our system, for reasons that are more blockchain related, we've got to do KYC and AML to a very high level. Then from a cannabis regulations perspective, particularly the medical programs, there's also a level of IDing we've got to do there. So we end up being able to ID people to a very high level. Now, what we're then able to do is apply that level of identification to the delivery of marketing content. First of all, to be able to tailor it, but more importantly, to be able to allow a regulator in a particular area to say, okay, we don't want anyone under 18 to ever see any cannabis advertising. Right now, that would just mean there's no cannabis advertising, which is not really a solution the industry is willing to bear. However, if we have this infrastructure of tappable things, whether they're posters or products or cards, then all of a sudden we've built a way for cannabis companies to be able to market in a transparent and legitimate fashion.
Very interesting. Yeah. So you could tap, and if you're not 18, it just doesn't show you anything, right?
Well, it says, you need to be 18 to see this content. We're sorry.
Right. Right. Very interesting. So pretty complicated. This is a pretty big undertaking. I have a few questions more related to EOS. How did you decide to start using EOS for this project, and why not go with one of the competitors out there?
Because I actually want to create this and for it to work when people use it. So,
good answer.
Well, like, you know, it's legitimately a big part of the reason. So, I mean, you know, how could I go on and use something that's got a limit of 20 transactions per second? I mean, that wouldn't support just my application. Forget about, you know, all the others I'd have to share the network with. So Fundamentally, one of the things I really appreciate about the EOS platform was its transactional capacity, which is heads and shoulders above anything else out there. Secondly, We really like the way that the governance works in EOS, because one of the things that we are all about is safety for the users of our system. So that one thing that I never wanted to allow was someone to get robbed, because we built a system to facilitate them getting robbed. So within that, EOS has the ability for arbitration, which I think is important in any blockchain application that's going to be adopted at mass scale, because people will make mistakes and they need to be able to be dealt with. Now, we can change the way that they're dealt with compared to traditional services like credit cards and things like that, but we can't completely take it away. We also like the way that the block producers are governed within the EOS context, and the ability to relatively simply move between different things, you know, like code forks and side chains, of which we've seen a number of really interesting things come up. I mean, we've spoken to quite a few of the people that are doing code forks of EOS, and a lot of them have some really good thinking associated with why they made that strategic choice.
Sure. Yeah. So are you at this point then planning to launch on the actual mainnet?
Yeah, so our token is going to be called Seed Token, and it's going to be dropped onto the EOS mainnet.
Oh, so will there be an airdrop? Is that what you mean by dropped?
Yes.
Okay, so there's a question. I was, after talking about this, I was assuming there would be no airdrop because you were talking about how it was backed by a one-to-one with the US dollar. So we've
got two tokens.
Two tokens. Okay, there we go. So the Seed token is not backed, and that's, I'm assuming, what kind of runs all of that data that you're tracking. And
the way that I'd explain why do we need the Seed token is we need the Seed token because cannabis users often and legitimately don't want to know about or deal with anything to do with blockchain. You know, there's a lot of complexity in terms of even just the costing model. As you've seen, this system's pretty complex. Now, at the end of the day, we've also tried to make sure that our system is as accessible as possible. You know, if we deploy this system and homeless people can't participate, but they still need medicinal cannabis, well, then we're just a stark failure. We've managed to get around that so that we're able to support people without mobile devices, without an address. One of the ways actually we get around that is by deploying smart cards that become the security behind them is, you know, could be is considered as strong, if not better, than that you've got on a credit card. And then that becomes a virtual ID card and cannabis-specific credit card. So it allows participation in the system for those that don't own a mobile device. But above and beyond that, you know, we're going to have growers up in Humboldt County that are off the grid but still want to grow cannabis and have every right to do so. So how are we going to facilitate that? So what we did is we simplified it to a level where if you're a grower and you want to do the least amount of stuff, all you need to do is sign up to the system, buy smart packaging to put your products in, and we've got a number of ways that we facilitate that as well where, again, we're not out there to try and come dominate the packaging market or the packaging game. We work with any packaging provider, so I just wanted to mention that. But, yeah, so that grower just buys smart packaging, pays a subscription fee to the platform. That's all. That's all they have to deal with. Because it needs to be simple, and the detail and the complexity needs to be there for those that want it and are interested in it. So,
sure. Okay, so that's the Seed token. And then the other token is for tracking the financial
side of things. We call that PODS, which is an acronym for proof of delivery. Also, you know, somewhat relevant in the cannabis context, but that's what we use to be able to enable the end-to-end tracking of the financial activity linked to the product movement.
Okay. Okay. And do you have any solutions for kind of an on-ramp to crypto? I know this is just a big problem everywhere with, you know, it's not necessarily that easy to just buy tokens, right? You have to go to Coinbase or to wherever to trade your dollars for crypto, and then you have to take that and sell it for whatever token you have. You know, it's a multi-step, it's not a grandma-friendly solution, right? So, do you guys have anything that you're doing that will help with that, like point of sale type of thing, or how's, I don't know, just, yeah.
So yes, I do. Okay.
Great.
Unfortunately, I can't go into a great detail about some of these things because we are in some commercially sensitive negotiations. Okay. However, from both a cannabis context and a cryptocurrency context, we've got a number of ways that we try to deal with it as well. Part of our strategy as well there is not to be overly reliant on only a single method for on and off ramps, because if that single method gets shut down, that leaves you in a spot of bother. So a little bit of redundancy will go a long, long way. But what I'd just say with that is that for people that are interested in how we're going to deal with that problem, just join our Telegram group and stay posted.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'd love to hear about that. Those kind of problems I'm really interested in because it's such a bottleneck, you know.
Sure.
It really is a roadblock to adoption of crypto and of EOS and projects like yours. So I'm excited for that. I'll be waiting with anticipation to learn more about that. Let's see. So do you have a date for the airdrop?
Once again, I'm just going to have to ask people to stay posted.
Very good. I understand. Well, definitely, we're looking forward to that. We're looking forward to these solutions you're talking about. It should be very interesting. One other question I thought of earlier is, you know, you mentioned that this could be used for a lot of industries. I mean, supply chain is very important everywhere. You're starting with cannabis, which is probably where the most need is because it's so complex with all the regulations and laws and medical side of things. But are you planning or open to using your technology once wider adoption has occurred to apply it to other industries?
Absolutely. We actually need to generally hold people back with, because, you know, quite often when you come and you talk to people and you talk about what we're doing for supply chain and then how we're deploying it for cannabis, people's brains start ticking and then they go, hey, I could do this in my industry and I could get this value out over here. And this. So one thing that we're very strong on is that we're not going to allow someone to divert our focus because we will make sure that we deploy this flawlessly. So it's very important for adoption and validation. Mm-hmm. However, we have got a number of different business models for how we plan to allow the technology to be deployed in other sectors. And it's something that we'll definitely see a big pickup in next year, I think. But, you know, our other philosophy around this is that before we do too much of that, we'd really like to actually have our product out there and working. So, you know, the proof is in the data, and we want that data to exist before we start to take on issues with more commercial obstacles in place than the cannabis industry have.
Cool. And yeah, I think that's really smart. You know, I always go back to the example of Facebook, where basically everybody's on Facebook now, but originally it was just for students at Harvard, and then it was for college students around America. And then it just grew and grew, that circle grew and grew, but they would not have taken over like a MySpace and whatnot without starting in a really focused manner. So I think, at least from a business perspective, that's definitely a smart move on your part. I do want to ask a follow-up question on the banking side of things. You know, you're looking to solve a lot of these problems with the banking. So maybe hopefully with what you do, it'll solve these problems and cannabis companies will be able to get bank accounts. But I wonder, will you be able to, or would somebody be able to just kind of bypass the US dollar and stay away from fiat or stay away from having a bank and just use you know, your seed token or your pods token to run their business?
So technically, yes, but it's not what we're designing it for. So I guess people that are determined to do so could effectively hold their funds always in two digital tokens. But I mean, we aren't going to offer the services that a bank offers. You know, we don't have credit cards and savings cards and, you know, loans that we're going to be doing. And I mean, okay, yeah, we've got investment modules in our platform to facilitate that and make it easier, but it's not quite the same. I think banks also suffer from a bit of stigma, but, you know, they've enabled a lot of good things thus far. And the, you know, in some ways, I guess it's similar to the regulators, right? Like, we could be going off and trying to do this in spite of all of the regulators and saying, well, we're not going to give you anything. But no, that's sort of a counterintuitive point where ideally we want to do this in a way that everyone participates and does better for it.
Sure. Okay, cool. Well, it sounds like you have a pretty balanced approach to all of this and are really going about it an intelligent sort of way. I guess I wouldn't expect much else from RF engineer. But so, yeah, is there anything else you'd like to let people know about or tell people where they can find you and keep up with what you're doing?
Yeah, look, I'd really just reiterate that for people to stay up to date with what we're doing, jump on the website, get in the Telegram group, and those are really going to be the two main forms of communication that we've got. You know, our other socials are good to jump onto as well. Expect to see us in North America in the not too distant future. We've got a few exciting things upcoming, but again, unfortunately, I've still got to keep up this air of mystery. So please, guys, do jump onto our Telegram and we'll talk to you there.
Okay, very good. And just to remind everybody, it's parsl.co is the website. I will have a link to the Telegram and the website and some of the social media things in the show notes over at exploringeos.com. Isaac, I'd love to thank you and for joining me today in Exploring EOS. So I appreciate it. And that's it for today's episode. Please, everybody, take a moment to leave us a rating and review on your podcast app of choice. And let me know what kind of guests you'd like to hear from in the future. Reviews really help us get the word out and spread the word about EOS. So thank you very much, and I look forward to exploring EOS with you in the next episode. The content of the Exploring EOS show, videos, and website are for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended to be and does not constitute financial, investment, legal, or professional advice of any kind. You should not take action on any information provided without first consulting a professional advisor and doing your own due diligence. Investing in cryptocurrencies is risky. Please seek professional help.